The Blind Californian. Quarterly Magazine of the California Council of the Blind. Fall 2015. Volume 59, Number 4. Published in Braille, large print, cassette, email. Subscribe at ccbnet.org, and online in readable and downloadable text and audio media. Jeff Tom, President, 7414 Mooncrest Way, Sacramento, California, 95831. 916-429-8201. Jeff.Tom@ccbnet.org. Executive Office, California Council of the Blind, 1303 J Street, Suite 400, Sacramento, California, 95814-2900-800-221-6359, toll-free. 916-441-2100 Voice. 916-441-2188 Fax. Email, ccotb@ccbnet.org. Website, www.ccbnet.org. San Francisco Bay Area Office. Catherine Skivers. 836 Risota Street, Hayward, California, 94545-2120. 510-357-1986. Kathy Skivers at ccbnet.org. Los Angeles Area Office, Donna Pomerantz. 1115 Cordova Street, number 402, Pasadena, California, 91106-3036. 626-844-4388. Donna.Pomerantz@ccbnet.org. Mitch Pomerantz, Director. Advocacy and Governmental Affairs. 800-221-6359, toll-free. 626-372-5150. Cell, governmentalaffairs@ccbnet.org. Webmaster@ccbnet.org. Judy Wilkinson, Editor, 1550 Bancroft Avenue, number 113, San Leandro, California, 94577-5264. 510-357-1844. Editor@ccbnet.org. Susan Glass, Associate Editor, 408-257-1034, editor@ccbnet.org. The California Connection is a weekly news service provided, by phone, in English and Spanish at 800-221-6359 Monday through Friday after 4 p.m. and all day on weekends and holidays. By email subscription. Send a blank message to Connection Subscribe at ccbnet.org. Or on the web at www.ccbnet.org. Submissions for the California Connection can be emailed to caconnection@ccbnet.org. Non-members are requested and members are invited to pay a yearly subscription fee of $10 toward the production of The Blind Californian. In accepting material for The Blind Californian, priority will be given to articles concerning the activities and policies of the California Council of the Blind and to the experiences and concerns of blind persons. Recommended length is under 3 pages or 1,800 words. The deadline to submit material for the winter 2015 issue of The Blind Californian is noon on December 1, 2015. Please send all address changes to Executive Office. Table of Contents. From the Editor's Desk, by Judy Wilkinson.
Track 2.
A Walk on the Light Side, San Francisco Chapter Profile, by Susan Glass.
Track 3.
Governmental Affairs Report, by Mitch Pomerantz.
Track 4.
San Francisco Chapter Student Education Access Grant, by David Mandel and Charlie Doris.
Track 5.
CCB Board Meeting Minutes February 5, May 28, 2015, by Judy Wilkinson, Secretary.
Track 6.
Blind Californians featured at this summer's ACB Audio Description Mini Conference, by Susan Glass.
Track 7.
California Council of the Blind Officers and Board.
Track 8.
From the Editor's Desk, by Judy Wilkinson. News Flash. We learned at the convention that our cassette duplicator has died. We are asking all interested recipients of the cassette version of the BC to participate in a conference call on November 11th. Check the Connection or the CCB listserv for call-in information. In the meantime, for the next two issues, cassette users will receive the magazine on CD. What Jeff says in his article wonderfully dovetails with my message to BC readers. As a member of ACB's Board of Publications, I am privileged to help select ACB's Writing and Newsletter Awards. At this year's ACB convention, I had a secret to keep and a job to do, make sure a certain person was in the room during the awards presentations during the Monday morning session. Imagine my nervousness when minutes before Board of Publications Chair Denise Colley would announce the name, I couldn't ascertain her presence. Finally, I just had to hope. Sure enough, when the winner of ACB's Top Writing Award, the Ned E. Freeman Award for the Best Single Article of the Year was announced, our own very surprised Susan Glass made her way from the far back of the room to the podium to cheers and applause, lots of which came from the California delegation. She spoke of the honor of sharing with and contributing to our community. Read Best Audio Holiday Season Ever in the Braille Forum, March, 2015. Since Susan has taken on the role of BC Associate Editor, she has contributed articles to each issue, especially those chapter profiles. This issue is no exception. Speaking of awards, by the time you read this, the Blind Californian Awards for 2014 will have been announced at the CCB convention, more about those in the winter issue. But there has been a scarcity of articles submitted by members in 2015. The publications committee will have slim pickings in considering writing awards for 2015. But while awards are nice, what we really are missing is the vital input of articles from BC readers. As Jeff reminds us in his column, we all live interesting lives and could inspire others by sharing our experiences. In fact, I've heard from several BC readers about our nonagenarians and octogenarians. Someone tapped me on the shoulder at the ACB convention and my dear friend Obi Shulman, whom I can always count on to tease me mercilessly in our exhibit hall which he co-chairs, hissed, "What am I, chopped liver?" I promised I had been saving him for an interview article. Winter is coming. Charlotte Riddle from my own Bayview chapter shyly asked me if I would add her to the list. You bet, Charlotte, 89 this past August 19th, with four children, five grandchildren, one each passed away, and count them, six great-grandchildren. Charlotte reminded me of other Bayviewers. Connie Gill, I mentioned Elle in the last issue but forgot Connie, who you may remember paid her back BC dues at $10 an issue, a mighty $500. Katrina McCurdy, who can forget that fudge, and Carrie Carter, just 80 last April. I know lots of other nanas, and octos are lurking, so make yourselves known. In the upcoming winter issue, longtime contributor to the BC Sylvia, Sugar, Lopez returns with an article about her Fresno chapter's Dining in the Dark fundraiser. You'll remember her yummy recipes. I hope you'll join Sylvia contributing material in 2016 as the BC celebrates its 60th year of publication. Remember, the Californian in our publication title means not only Susan and me as editors, but you, and you and you. A Walk on the Light Side by Jeff Tom, CCB President. Those of you who have read my messages and listened to my convention speeches during either my first go-round or my current tenure as CCB President know that I can be very fervent about the need for commitment and hard work from each and every one of us as the only formula for the success of our organization. As I pass the midpoint of what will be my final term as president, I have become even more passionate in that view, and don't think for even a Philadelphia minute that I don't intend to make that point in the future. However, CCB isn't your entire life, and although it may surprise a few of you, it isn't mine either. In fact, when someone I know, whether a former colleague with the California legislature or a member of this organization, is, in my view anyway, overly fixated on his or her work, I feel rather sad about it. We can be extremely proud of the variety of leisure and lifestyle articles that have graced these pages over the years. From travel to gardening, from the birth of a grandchild to the joy of being a baseball fan, and of course, the list could go on and on. My wife Leslie and I are no different. One of the reasons I most enjoyed working for the legislature was that it was a segment of my life virtually devoid of contact with the blindness community. As for the two of us, we thoroughly enjoy having foreign exchange students who live with us for about a 10-month period and attend the local high school. We've had approximately 10 students, and this year we have a girl from the Ukraine. Of course, we also enjoy cruising to Hawaii and other similarly selfish pursuits. In fact, when I don't take a weekend off to spend some family time, read a book or maybe just watch some football, burnout begins to set in. Conversely, after I give myself a break, I find myself energized and ready to hit the ground running to fulfill my CCB responsibilities. I really take to heart the message of those Kaiser commercials which focuses on doing those things you enjoy in order to really thrive. From the perspective of a reader of this magazine, I urge you to keep those articles coming about those parts of your life that have nothing to do with CCB. After all, the CCB family is just like any other family in that its members have both common and individual interests. Let's continue to share those things that make our life complete. San Francisco Chapter Profile by Susan Glass. Do these names sound familiar to you? David Jackson, Peter Pardini, Linda Perel, Vita Zavoli, Frank Weld, Sandra Fancher, Jennifer Holloway? Chances are you recognize all or most of them. All are members of the San Francisco CCB chapter which, to quote its president Frank Weld, is an organization that has a strong sense of its history as an active local advocacy group, one that has also made significant contributions to the California Council of the Blind. By no means is this an overstatement. Think of how many of these named individuals have served on the CCB board, the Board of Publications, and other crucial CCB committees. So what makes the San Francisco chapter outstanding? Service, answers Frank. It grounds a chapter to have a service project. It takes people out of themselves. The San Francisco chapter's service project is its Alice Chavez Pardini Education Advancement Grant, which provides up to $2,500 annually to a legally blind student who demonstrates a need for assistance in improving his or her access to education. According to chapter member and vice chair of the funding committee Jennifer Holloway, this year's grant winner wants to be a technical writer for Apple Computing, and work with them on product accessibility. The grant provides access technology equipment to young people between the ages of 8 and 18, says Holloway, and providing educational help to young people plants the seeds for the next generation of CCB members. See related article in this issue for an in-depth description of the project. Like all of us in CCB, the San Francisco chapter is interested in growing its membership. According to Jennifer Holloway, the chapter's monthly meetings featuring excellent program speakers go a long way toward doing this. Program speakers have addressed such issues as mapping and accessible transportation, and accessible script talk. But Jennifer has additional exciting ideas for attracting new members, several of which focus on promoting Braille literacy. Jennifer works at the San Francisco Lighthouse as its Braille Project Coordinator. She'd like to see the chapter sponsor a week-long Braille training program bearing the campaign slogan Braille Rocks. One featured activity could be an EB crossword puzzle where participants are challenged to find what's not written in EB. She'd like to see her chapter sponsor a Braille literacy writing contest, the winner of which would be awarded $200 to underwrite his/her attendance at the annual CCB convention. Fellowship outside of chapter meetings goes a long way toward strengthening bonds between members. San Francisco chapter members hold bingo pizza fundraisers and they also meet informally for picnics. According to longtime chapter member Frank Weld, attracting new members starts with simple encounters. You meet a blind or visually impaired individual while you're out and about in your community, perhaps riding the bus or perhaps waiting in a doctor's office. He she is unfamiliar with CCB, so you share your knowledge. Then, and this is the most important part, you follow up on your first contact. Make sure before leaving your first encounter, that you exchange phone numbers or email addresses. Invite the person to your next chapter meeting, and remind them about it a few days before it actually happens. You don't need to be a pest. Just take those first few initial steps. Any chapter that wants to make growth a priority can do it, says Frank. People in non-urban centers may feel there aren't other blind people around. But when you look at the numbers even in a small town, you're not the only blind person there. Like the other CCB chapters profiled in the Blind Californian, the San Francisco chapter has an aging membership. We need to bring in new people, says Frank. We haven't yet cracked the code on that. But Jennifer Holloway thinks that her chapter and CCB are on the right track, and democracy, she says, is what the organization has going for it. A former member of NFB, Jennifer was attracted to ACB and CCB because of its open philosophy, the idea that there are many ways of living life as a blind person, and that it's okay to have multiple opinions about issues, and it's okay to ask for help when you need it. She appreciates the fact that CCB encourages members wishing to run for offices to share their views in writing with all members. Service, fellowship, education and democracy appear to be four key concepts crucial for building strong, dynamic CCB chapters. Hats off to all CCB members who turn these concepts into active, lived reality. Governmental Affairs Report by Mitch Pomerantz. In a time of essentially instant communications, writing a governmental affairs update in August for publication in October seems slightly out of date, pun intended. Nonetheless, that is the task set before me and I undertake it willingly. Here's where we stand as of this writing. SB 199, Hall, the CCB-sponsored bill to add up to 2 hours per month of reading assistance and document completion to the list of services covered under the In-Home Supportive Services, ICE, program. I remain cautiously optimistic that SB 199 will become law. Editor's note, this bill is currently on the governor's desk. I am pleased to report that Alberta, 1353, Patterson, which would prohibit the Department of Transportation, Caltrans, from being reimbursed for utility costs incurred by vendors under the Business Enterprises Program and would require Caltrans to pay for those utility costs using state funds, has been signed by the governor. Vendors running roadside vending facilities typically operate on very slim profit margins, and paying for utilities from those meager profits posed a significant hardship. CCB was pleased to work alongside an active group of vendors to obtain enactment of Alberta, 1353. We were not so fortunate regarding AB 474, Brown and Thurmond. This proposal would have pegged the level of individual SSI benefits in California at 112% of the federal poverty level, but this increase was not included in the FY 2016 budget agreed to by the governor and legislature. AB 683, Low, would, among other things, enhance the accessibility of online voter information for blind and visually impaired persons. On the surface, that sounds like something CCB should automatically support. However, the devil is in the details, as they say, and we could not endorse this proposal. For some background, initially, existing law called for establishment of an entity known as the Visually Impaired Voter Assistance Board, whose charge would have been to put forward recommendations to the Secretary of State for improving the accessibility of election materials made available over the Internet. That body was never constituted, but was instead supplanted by a cross-disability entity, the Voter Accessibility Advisory Committee. CCB advocated for a subcommittee specific to the concerns of blind and visually impaired persons with representation from consumer organizations representing our constituency. While language establishing this subcommittee was included in AB 683, the makeup of the subcommittee was not specified. Hence the necessity for CCB to oppose this bill as written. It is likely that it will pass, and may have already done so by the time you read this, and be signed into law. Notwithstanding, CCB was sufficiently concerned over a lack of guaranteed consumer participation that we felt the need to take the position we ultimately did. SB 450, Roth, would permit some counties to conduct elections primarily via vote by mail. CCB is involved in drafting language which would call for those counties to offer such ballots which blind and visually impaired voters could privately and independently read and mark before a county could conduct a vote by mail election. The bill is likely to include other beneficial provisions but is not expected to be taken up until the second year of the current legislative session. And speaking of next year's legislative session, CCB is working with Guide Dog Users of California, DUC, to draft legislation to permit trainers from schools outside the state which are certified by the International Guide Dog Federation to be able to provide follow-up services to their students, and to increase penalties for attacks on guide dogs, in or out of harness. You will hear more about this proposal when it has been finalized. I want to close with a bit of an editorial rant. It has become extremely fashionable among many within CCB to identify with the independent living and or cross disability movement here in California. The thinking is that there are far more people with physical or other disabilities than there are persons who are blind or visually impaired. As such, if we are to achieve any success in upholding or expanding our rights, we must coalesce with the broader disability community. While such an argument is seductive and fits well with the California spirit, a close inspection of current circumstance and past history tells us differently. I only need to cite our ongoing fight to retain and enhance categorical services for the blind. Other than our colleagues in the deaf and hard of hearing community, those in the broader disability rights movement continue to believe that blind and visually impaired persons do not need the kind of categorical or specialized services we know are crucial for our functioning as independent members of society. My rule of thumb when it comes to working with the larger disability community is fairly simple. We work together with other disability groups when we know two things: 1. That our interests are mutual, and 2. That our interests will not be subsumed by the larger group. I am an advocate first and foremost for the blind and visually impaired, and a political realist. I know from decades of experience that if we don't stand up for what we need, no one else will do it for us. If the foregoing means I'm old-fashioned and out of step, then I am proud to own it. See everyone next time. San Francisco Chapter Student Education Access Grant by David Mandel and Charlie Doris. Editor's note: the article Angela and Alice by Charlie Doris appeared in the 2012 Spring BC. We thought it was high time for an update. In 2005, the San Francisco chapter of CCB started a community outreach program that has evolved into today's Student Education Access Grant Program, SEA Grant. Since 2005, the chapter has awarded grants totaling $25,500 to 12 legally blind students in the Bay Area. The grants have been used to purchase computers, software, and accessible technology. In addition, this program has become the primary focus for the chapter's fundraising efforts and an important source of chapter energy. The grant's purpose: the grant supports CCB's mission to increase the independence, security, equality of opportunity, and the quality of life for all Californians who are blind or have low vision. Today, the SEA grant program awards $2,500 to a legally blind Bay Area student, age 8 to 18, who can best demonstrate the need for accessible equipment to enhance their educational opportunities. Higher education is critical to all students today, but it is indispensable for blind and visually impaired students. Also, technology is being used in earlier and earlier grades, and students who lack access to such technology run the risk of falling behind, never catching up, and not reaching college. The SEA grant focuses on grammar and high school students because it is a critical period for them, and financial aid for technology is more limited than for older students. Recent grant recipients exemplify this purpose. Recent grant recipients: the 2015 recipient was Destiny Snell, age 17, then a junior at Annalee High School in Sebastopol. In 2013, Destiny lost most of her vision due to a brain tumor that is now benign after two operations and numerous radiation treatments. But that hasn't stopped her from earning a 4.0 grade point average and holding down two jobs at CVS and a family service agency. She is also learning Braille. Destiny asked for a MacBook Pro. She says, "It is my goal to graduate from college and hopefully continue on in school or work as an assistive technology specialist. It is my intention to help others who need help accessing technology, whether they are visually impaired or have other disabilities." Destiny's initiative is amazing. With other students in her area, she is organizing a Blindness and Vision Impairment Awareness Day to be held early next year in Sonoma County. Not only is Destiny intelligent, ambitious, determined, motivated, and eloquent, she has faced adversities that have caused her to become mature beyond her 17 years. Equally impressive was the 2014 recipient Ethan Frung, then age 12 and a 6th grade student at Lawton Middle School in San Francisco. His vision started deteriorating at an early age due to cone and rod dystrophy, and he started learning Braille in the 3rd grade. Since then, he has been in the Braille Challenge several times, coming in first, second, or third place. According to Ethan, Braille is very useful, but technology can lead me towards greater independence, and so, he used the grant to purchase a refreshable Braille display. Ethan likes technology, but he also likes helping people. 2 years ago, he oriented two legally blind students to the school building on their first day of school because he remembered how difficult it had been for him on his own first day. Also, he recorded a book for a legally blind student who had not yet learned Braille. Ethan combines poise, intelligence and confidence with caring. The way it gets done within the SF chapter, a 7-person standing committee recommends for chapter approval program guidelines such as geographic territory and the age of applicants. The committee is then responsible for updating application material, soliciting applications, reviewing the applications, choosing the finalists to be personally interviewed, selecting the grant recipient, and purchasing the technology requested. The chapter allows the committee to make the final grant recipient decision without ratification by the chapter, which reinforces the committee's sense of responsibility for all aspects of the program. There is about a 3-month period when applications can be submitted. To publicize the grant, committee members are responsible for contacting people such as teachers of the visually impaired and organizations that serve young people who are visually impaired. These contacts are in the current 8 counties in the Bay Area eligible for the grant: Alameda, Contra Costa, Marin, San Francisco, San Mateo, Santa Clara, Solano, Sonoma and San Benito. The SEA grant committee is very much a working group. After the application deadline, there is a 12-month period for reviewing applications, interviewing finalists, and selecting the grant recipient. For all its work, the committee's payoff comes when the finalists are interviewed. Each has his or her own remarkable story of dealing with adversity, which sometimes involves more than their sight impairment. Listening to them is inspiring and humbling. Thus, several years ago, the committee discontinued the term winner and replaced it with grant recipient. The applicants are too good and the choice of the recipient too difficult to say that only one of them is a winner. Committee members then work with the grant recipient and their family to purchase the technology, sometimes using a third-party adaptive technology consultant. In this way, the recipient gets what they want and need, usually at a favorable price, and the technology is ready to be used when it's delivered. When other applicants are notified of the outcome, they are also told of other sources of money for their technology needs. Involving the whole chapter, the committee informs the chapter of the grant recipient at the chapter meeting immediately following the decision. There is then an award ceremony that lets the chapter meet the recipient and vice versa. In this way, the result of the program is not abstract, but very personal, which spurs the chapter forward into the next year. This ceremony also validates the fundraising efforts of the chapter, which includes virtually all members. Currently, all money for the grant is raised through fundraisers such as a raffle, a pizza bingo lunch, and the sale of merchandise at CCB conventions and other events. This is not easy. The SEA grant's future. The San Francisco chapter's grant program will begin its 12th year in January, 2016, accepting applications from legally blind students aged 8 to 18, living in the 8 counties listed above. The chapter knows it will find another group of remarkable applicants, and while only one will be the award recipient, the chapter is proud to make that contribution to our community. CCB Board Meeting Minutes February 5th, May 28, 2015 by Judy Wilkinson, Secretary. Here are the minutes for all but my final meeting as CCB Secretary. When those minutes are approved at the fall board meeting, I will summarize them in the winter issue. Here are the officers. I will only note absent members, and as always, if you want the appendices referred to, you can call the office. President Jeff Tom, First Vice President Eugene Lozano Jr., Second Vice President Roger Peterson, Secretary Judy Wilkinson, Treasurer Peter Pardini, Immediate Past President Donna Pomerantz, Directors Lena Bendy, Artis Bezin, Vincent Calderon, Paul Patch Jr., Linda Perel, John Ross, Frank Weld, Robert Wendt, Vita Zavoli. Minutes, February 5, 2015. President Jeff Tom called the meeting to order at 7:02 p.m. Absent: Lena Bendy, Robert Wendt. Other attendees: Steve Aminoff, Annette Carter, Albert Contreras, Ramona Craig, Christy Crespin, Margie Donovan, Steve Fort, Gabe Griffith, Jason and Jennifer Holloway, David Jackson, Pam and Ken Metz, Charles Nabarrett, Phil Obregon, Pedro Romero. There was no formal adoption of the agenda. Public comment, none. Approval of minutes. Gene moved and Artis seconded a motion to approve the board minutes for September 4, 2014. Vote unanimous. Ratification of board votes. Judy moved and Roger seconded a motion to extend the contract date from December 31 to March 1 for the already approved remaining 30 hours of the Drupal conversion contract. Vote unanimous. Roger moved and Peter seconded a motion to allocate an additional 30 hours plus further 10 hours at the discretion of the president to complete the Drupal conversion contract. Vote unanimous. Discussion of the 2015 conference convention. Jeff began the discussion by thanking those who have worked so hard on options for the convention, our negotiator, Gene, Peter and Donna. Our two choices for spring are, 1. Hold the conference slash convention at the Marriott Woodland Hills Hotel on either May 14th to 17th or May 28th to 31st. 2. Choose an entirely new site. Fall option, hold the convention at the Hilton Woodland Hills, our current hotel, October 1st to 4th. He and the other three board members unanimously favor holding the convention in the fall. Arguments against spring. The entire hotel site team, Ed, Jeff, Gene, Peter, Donna, Margie, would need to visit any hotel, including the Marriott, with regard to all our convention needs. All pre-convention activities would need to begin again, everything from arranging a contract and getting board approval, to credentials, to exhibitor packets, to arranging for speakers, to sending out pre-convention announcements, etc. would need to begin from scratch, a daunting task beginning at this late date. Fall advantage is really the reverse of all the spring issues. Plenty of time for planning, including perhaps cheaper airfares. No need for all the issues concerning a site visit. Significant financial benefits and concessions advantageous to both the organization and members attending the convention. Fall disadvantage is proximity to the Mutstrut. More important, the constitutional issue of the smaller board. Because our constitution states that elections will be held at the convention, as of July 1st, we would be without the second vice president, secretary and five board members, though the president can appoint a secretary. Gene, Donna and Peter added other issues ranging from the possibility of the Marriott not having a restaurant, to greater chance of getting volunteers, to better chance of attracting exhibitors, to giving the Southern California chapters more time to decide how they wish to participate in the convention. At this point we have a host for the welcome party but nothing else. Board questions and comments. John supported the fall option. Judy expressed concern about the statewide affiliates whose meetings and elections are tied to the convention. Gene moved and Donna seconded a motion to reschedule the 2015 CCB conference convention to the first weekend in October, October 1st to 4th, at the Woodland Hills Hilton Hotel. Further discussion. Linda supported Judy's worries about the meetings and elections for affiliates. She expressed extreme concern over losing one-third of the board. Also back-to-back conventions. Vince pointed out that we are making the best of a bad situation here, but it is just a one-time thing. Vita reiterated concern over the diminished board and asked if we could conduct major business by the end of June. Jeff said he was absolutely willing to call board meetings in June but consulted with Gabe as to whether the Constitution directed in any way holding such meetings. Gabe suggested that the easiest way would be for Jeff to call such a meeting. The consensus of the board was that we feel comfortable leaving it up to Jeff to call meetings. Judy asked if we could avoid scheduling meetings until board elections. It was agreed we can't make such a promise since anything could come up needing board action. Donna reminded us we could have multiple meetings before the end of June. Linda, while we're demolishing the box, what about having elections then a board meeting later in the convention? The thought was expressed that Sunday afternoon could work. Gene asked that we not lock in the planning committee so they could consider all alternatives. Jeff supports the concept. Linda came back to the diminished board issue, stating that she thought the tone was a bit cavalier. Jeff emphasized that we take the issue very seriously. Roger stated that in discussing the issue with the Constitution Committee, a special convention can be called with a minimum of one-third of the delegates and 50 members. In response to Vita's question as to whether the Constitution prohibited such a convention be held by phone, Jeff replied the Constitution is silent, but Roger reminded us of possible credentialing problems and the dicey situation in case the phones didn't work. Frank asked which board members would end terms in June: Roger, Judy, Artis, Linda, John, Robert, Vida. He also asked what the financial savings would be for holding the convention in the fall at the Hilton. Jeff said we're in negotiations, but at this time the information is confidential. But he emphasized the savings would be significant. For purposes of this discussion, Roger reminded us we're in negotiations for a 2016 contract. Gene emphasized that a board vote on that contract should occur long before June. Public comment: Steve Fort supports the fall option since it gives members time to save and he worries about the possibility of no restaurant at the Marriott. Margie Donovan expressed several concerns regarding the fall option, little or no concern for statewide affiliates. Too much emphasis on only financial benefits, not a good basis for planning decisions. Construction might not be finished. She wishes the board would think more globally. Gabb expressed support for the fall option and stated that as chair of the Constitution Committee, he stands ready to help any affiliate facing constitutional challenges for the convention. Vida asked that an announcement of such assistance be publicized on the president's list. Artis concurs with worries about the statewide affiliates. She suggested we might still be able to have the convention in May if we get word out right away. Donna stated this is an unhappy situation, but we don't want to burden our convention planner for the spring. He and his committee will have more time with the fall convention. Paul expressed concern about the Mutt-Strutt being so close to the convention. Jeff agreed and stated the committee had definitely discussed that problem. The motion passed with one no vote and one abstention. OCB Student Assistance Fund. Judy moved and Peter seconded a motion to remove the restrictions on the OCB Student Assistance Fund and return the money under budget item 1035 to CCB's general fund. She presented background material. See Appendix 1. Jeff stated that in their discussion of dissolving the OCB alumni affiliate, the members had specifically addressed this issue and made the recommendation concerning this money. He also pointed out that we have lost around $10,000 from our San Diego fundraisers, which this money would partially offset for this year. The motion passed with one no vote. Mutt-Strutt budget: Jeff stated we already have spent $50 for a deposit on the Sacramento Park. And Peter added that in order to save our data with First Giving, we've spent $500. Peter read the proposed Mutt-Strutt budget. See Appendix 2. Total revenue proposed: Los Angeles $25,050. Sacramento $27,550. The drawing should produce $4,000. Board discussion: Frank asked where the registration projections come from, given that a total of 400 participants for each region seemed unrealistic to him. The event planners have suggested this number. He asked about the projected expenses and profit. Peter said each region would spend about $19,000. LA's profit estimated at $5,800. Sacramento's $7,895. Vida stated she couldn't decide whether these numbers seemed realistic since she had nothing to compare them with. She requested a line item statement for last year's Mutt-Strutt rather than the minimal one the board received this morning. Peter agreed to send it. Judy asked for a history of the difference between our projected income and the actual profits. She suspected we overestimate. In fact, last year the projection was fairly close, as Sacramento had estimated a loss. The projected revenue was $7,558. Actual revenue was $6,552. Linda wanted to confirm that coordinators such as the volunteer coordinator would be paid. Jeff confirmed this. Linda expressed her pleasure that such efforts would be recognized. She asked who the event planner is. Jeff asked Donna to give background. Donna said she had interviewed several but that W2 had won out. She reminded us that we had asked for such an event planner given that we felt our resources were stretched so thin. Jeff reiterated that this is the next big step if we are going to grow this event as we hope. Judy asked what they will do for us. It will be spelled out in the contract, but they will provide services such as marketing, contacting running clubs, getting us on Save the Date events. In response to Vita's question as to whether we would pay less in printing costs by using Save the Date options, Jeff pointed out we would be getting more bang for our buck as we had spent too much on the quality of our printed materials. Donna stated the two regions are working on expanding partnerships and people are already clamoring to begin helping. Both regions are building friends. Frank stated the expenses look reasonable to him and asked if added costs for things like porta-potties had been included given higher estimated attendance. For LA this is not an issue but the budget was increased in Sacramento. Artis moved and Donna seconded a motion to approve the Mutstrut budget. The motion passed with 3 abstentions. Updates. Jeff gave an update about replacing our phone system. He, Ed, Gene, Donna and Peter have gotten a couple of bids and are getting another on Friday. The specs were approved by the TOG. This is a long-term investment so we are being very careful. Donna added that we tried to get a grant but are too small. The meeting was adjourned at 9:05 p.m. Minutes, March 12, 2015. The board met in executive session commencing at approximately 7:05 p.m. Jeff reported that the board adopted a motion to hold the 2015 Sacramento and Los Angeles Mutstrut events in conjunction with City of Hope, in accordance with prescribed requirements. The board also discussed a legal matter. Submitted by President Jeff Tom, May 6, 2015. President Jeff Tom called the meeting to order at 7:02 p.m. Absent, John Ross, Robert Went. The board moved into executive session. A CCB matter was discussed. Gene moved and Roger seconded a motion to accept a proposal to hire Peter Alchil for mediation and planning. The motion carried. The meeting recessed at 7:40 p.m. The public portion of the meeting convened at 7:45 p.m. Directors John Ross and Robert Went were absent. Attendees, Steve Aminov, Annette Carter, Phil Obregon, Pam Pelagi, Margie Donovan. Linda moved and Gene seconded a motion to approve the board minutes for February 5, 2015. The motion passed with 1 abstention. Peter moved and Donna seconded a motion to approve the minutes from the board executive session of March 12, 2015. The motion passed with 2 abstentions. Discipline Committee Report. Judy reported that as a result of the meeting including board members Roger Peterson and Linda Perel, it was decided that since Don Brown was not a CCB member in 2014 and is not currently a member, no action can be taken. She reiterated that the committee supports GDUC's efforts to regain its incorporation status. Gene moved and Peter seconded the motion to accept the committee's report. Vote unanimous. See Appendix 1. Board List. Vita explained that as now configured, the board list is the only list for which reply goes to the entire list instead of the poster. On all other lists, reply to all is used to reply to the entire list. She pointed out this change would reduce traffic on the list. Vita moved and Judy seconded a motion to change the board list from reply going to all members to reply going to the messages poster. Vote unanimous. Treasurer's update. Peter reported that between January 1st and April 30, 2015, revenue was $23,159 and expenses were $47,420. The difference, -$24,261. For 1 month of investments we lost -$8,446. Overall difference, -$32,707. Lena moved and Artis seconded a motion to accept the treasurer's update. Vote unanimous. Judy reminded Peter that as per Vita's request at the board meeting of February 5, 2015, he still hasn't sent a Mutstrut budget showing comparative line-by-line figures from 2014 and 2015. Peter said he would get this out right away. CCB budget. Vince reported the committee met in March. Extensive discussion followed. Judy asked for clarification for budgeted amounts on a number of items, the vehicle donation center, scholarship, phone, which issues were covered by the amount spent for the blind Californian. Peter agreed to check which issues were covered. Website development. At Donna's suggestion, we informally agreed that a legend is to the meaning of the alphabet soup notation, such as NPEF for Newell Perry Fund, would henceforth be provided. Donna moved and Artis seconded a motion to amend item 6080, the budgeted amount for telephone service, to $5,100. Vote unanimous. Linda reminded the board we need to calculate possible costs for recording the BC. Vita questioned the difference in the original budgeted cost for the Mutstrut, $23,000, and the amount now appearing, $35,000. The amount we pay City of Hope will depend on how much we actually raise. The more we spend, the more we will have made. She asked if budget item 4820, fundraising applied only to the Mutstrut. It was agreed to add a legend stating that this item refers only to the Mutstrut. She expressed concern proposed profit from the Mutstrut of $56,600. Judy pointed out this is in fact one-third of our proposed income for the year. Jeff reiterated that what we actually make in profit will determine what we spend and what we receive. He intimated that the amount raised will be revealing about our investment in the Mutstrut. Artis asked about the decreased amount for medical insurance. The costs have gone down but the coverage has not changed. Vita asked if item 4080 contributions refers to the money from SoCalGas. Confusion ensued as to how to label this item and how to link it to the rest of the budget. Peter moved and Artis seconded a motion to add a new line item, advertising. Linda suggested this is like underwriting. Vita explained that SoCal approached us to have an ad on our website. The TOG put up what they requested. Vote unanimous. Confusion followed as to what our new actual expenses revenue are for the budget. Peter and Jeff disagreed about the final numbers. Judy moved and Donna seconded that within 30 days, the board will receive a clean copy of the revised budget, with a legend for the abbreviations. Vote unanimous. New telephone system. Jeff reported how complicated and frustrating the entire process had been. We received 4 bids, one didn't meet our needs and one came in very late. Jeff reported that neither Comcast nor Toshiba's systems are completely accessible. Peter moved and Artis seconded a motion to accept the Comcast bid. Linda reminded us of the new commitment from Comcast for accessibility as presented at the ACB convention last year. Vote unanimous. 2016 convention. Gene reported that extensive investigation has taken place to secure a Northern California location for the 2016 convention, the Bay Area, San Jose, Santa Clara, Sacramento, reaching out to Fresno, Visalia, Stockton, Modesto, Bakersfield. Most locations were unsuitable for a variety of reasons ranging from transportation issues to costs. We sent out 24 bids and received 2 viable options in Fresno and Visalia, both too difficult, expensive for transportation and or site inaccessibility and food beverage requirements. No Sacramento hotel responded, including the Hilton Arden West where we've had our past 2 Northern California conventions. All the hotels are trying to recoup losses both past and anticipated by demanding more in their bids. After checking the Constitution, Article 5.1, there are no restrictions as to where the convention can be held. We explored options in Southern California, including Palm Springs in June-July. There were concerns about the heat, especially for the dogs, and the ACB convention dates. The Hilton Woodland Hills, where we are having the 2015 and 2017 conventions, quoted us room rates of $129. We are exploring other options, casinos. 1. Beaches Casino, near San Diego, looks good. After some negotiating, their costs are more in line. Room rates, $99. Ground transportation, $50 round trip, down from $116, and $15,000 Bahamian dollars. The site committee would need to visit. They've given us dates in April and May. Another option would be to hold our convention in or near Reno, which would keep it in the Northern California arena. Jeff spoke to the Nevada Council president, who agreed we might explore a joint event with possible separate components. Judy moved and Vita seconded a motion to explore the Beaches option for 2016. Vote unanimous. Gene warned that we face even more serious problems beginning in 2018 when costs will begin to skyrocket. Peter moved and Vita seconded exploring the Nevada option. Jeff underscored that we would only do this if Beaches doesn't work out. Vote unanimous. Linda commented that Reno certainly isn't Northern California. Judy suggested going back to the Woodland Hills even at $129. Gene will see if they might renegotiate, though no one agreed with this amount. public comment Margie Donovan objected to the Reno possibility. But more important, she was concerned that she hadn't been interviewed regarding the Don Brown matter. Because she hadn't been there for the report, Judy summarized it. Margie then asked what might happen if he became a member. Jeff suggested this was out of order, but underscored that any board member could ask to revisit the matter in the future. Judy reminded Jeff that we needed to report the motion from the earlier executive session, motion to accept a proposal to hire Peter Alchil for mediation and planning. The meeting was adjourned at 9:40 p.m. May 28, 2015 President Jeff Tom called the meeting to order at 7:01 p.m. Absent, Vincent Calderon, John Ross. Other attendees, Steve Aminoff, Annette Carter, Margie Donovan, Gabe Griffith, Larry Hall, Guillermo Robles, Pete Romero, Ken Stewart, Vivian Younger. Artis moved and Lena seconded a motion to approve the minutes of May 6, 2015. Vote unanimous. Phone system update. Jeff reported that Comcast completed its office survey and things are on schedule. The system should be installed within the next couple of weeks. It turns out we don't have as much room in some of the mailboxes as we thought. Jeff reminded us there will be a learning curve, but some training will be provided. Conference convention update. Gene reported that on June 25th to 26th, the site committee will visit the Hilton Woodland Hills to make sure restaurant and other remodeling is suitable for our convention. They will also meet with hotel staff. Then the committee will visit the Vegas Casino near San Diego. The dates April 6 to 10, 2016 for our conference convention were the clear majority. The proposed contract includes everything we've asked for. The team will do a walkthrough, have dinner and meet with staff the next morning. They hope to bring a proposal to the board by June 30th. Jeff added that if anyone has further questions they'd like the committee to investigate, to contact the site committee. We do know we won't have to go through the casino to get to our meetings. The committee consists of Chair Dean Lozano, President Tom, past president and Low Vision Rep Donna Pomeranz, Margie Donovan Guide Dog Rep, Peter Pardini Treasurer and Exhibit Hall Rep. In response to a question from the public, Jeff clarified the board's earlier decision to return to Southern California for the 2016 conference/convention, and Gene reminded us that according to Constitution Article 5.1, the board can decide where to hold conventions. 2015 Conference Convention Board Meeting. Jeff stated the issue is whether to have the meeting of the board held in conjunction with the convention on Thursday or Sunday afternoon. Donna moved and Lena seconded a motion to hold the board meeting Sunday afternoon provided the hotel still has the space available. Gene opposed the motion. People don't stay through the Sunday morning business meeting as it is. It would be difficult for those who work to return home so late on Sunday or have to stay over another night. It will be difficult to fill the Thursday afternoon time period, and people will come late on Thursday. People may not buy the plated meal, leaving financial problems meeting our food beverage minimums. Judy stated that so far as she understood, the only reason for having the Sunday meeting was the one-time only difficulty of having a full complement of board members until after Friday's elections. She also asked for clarification that the board members would be seated immediately as their term would have begun on July 1st under ordinary circumstances. Jeff confirmed these points. Vita raised the issue of whether the Sunday meeting would be streamed, meaning the streaming team would also need to remain beyond the morning session. Jeff said this is not confirmed but conceded it would make a difference. Linda reiterated that this issue results from one of many fallouts from delaying the spring convention. She firmly opposed having any meeting with a diminished board. Peter reiterated that these are technically vacant terms so board members would assume office immediately upon election. Roger stated we should consider changing our constitution bylaws to avoid this problem in the future. Jeff spoke supporting the motion. This is a one-time only occurrence. No one likes it, but having a full board is important. On a voice vote the motion passed with one no vote. Gene requested a roll call vote. All members voted yes other than Gene's no public comment, none. Jeff thanked everyone for being on the call. The board then moved into executive session. The executive session was called to order at 7:53 p.m. The board moved into executive session. The board passed a motion authorizing the president to sign a retainer agreement with the Rosen et al. Law firm on the issue of absentee voting in California and related issues. contract matters were discussed. A charter issue will be discussed at our June meeting. We adjourned at 8:20 p.m. Blind Californians featured at this summer's ACB Audio Description Mini Conference by Susan Glass among the many exciting affiliate presentations and special interest programs featured at the ACB Conference and Convention held in Dallas last July, was an afternoon of seminars hosted by the ACB Audio Description Project, referred to hereafter as ACB ADP. The focus of the seminars was entirely on the consumers of audio description, AD, in other words, on blind people. Since CCB members participated in two of three panel discussions, we thought it appropriate to share the day's activities with readers of the BC. The first seminar was called Audio Description, the Latest and Greatest. Presenters focused on the following key areas: updating attendees regarding the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act, CVAA. Sharing information about the U.S. Department of Justice, DOJ, hearings on audio description. Enumerating description in performing arts, museums, and National Park Service facilities. And summarizing new and ongoing audio description project initiatives. Featured panelists included Dan Spoon, who chairs the ADP Steering Committee, Carl Richardson, who works as the ADA coordinator with the Massachusetts State House, Eric Bridges, ACB Legislative Liaison, and Tom Lodkowski, Vice President for Accessibility at Comcast. Following their presentation and a rousing question and answer session, a second panel took center stage to share audio description advancements in live theaters and museums. Mary Ann Siller, Dallas-based accessibility consultant and a representative from the Meadows Museum of Art, read a number of descriptions currently being featured alongside specific paintings now on display in the museum. Her presentation was especially relevant for a number of ACB convention goers who, 2 days later, participated in a guided tour of the Meadows Museum. Susan Glass then shared her experience attending an audio-described live theater production of Fiddler on the Roof at Arena Stage in Washington, D.C. Significantly, the describer was none other than Susan's own sister Jolynn Bailey Page. The described production was the result of a grant-funded collaboration between ACB and Arena Stage. Editor's note, see Susan's winning BF article. That afternoon's final seminar was called Audio Description, Make It Work For You, and focused on practical steps that all ACB members can take towards promoting audio description in their local communities. Speaking to our gathering on speakerphone from his home in Raleigh, North Carolina, ADP webmaster Fred Brack gave us a guided, link-by-link tour of the ADP website, featuring an in-progress directory of performing arts theaters throughout the United States that offer live audio description, listings of most recent DVDs with audio description, updates on laws pertaining to audio description, and audio archives of last summer's ACB Audio Description Conference in Las Vegas that featured a number of international presenters and attendees. If you've never checked out this website, do so. It's fabulous, and works beautifully with screen readers and braille displays. Its address is www.acb.org/ADP note. Susan Glass will write an article which she hopes will appear in the November eForum featuring Fred's outstanding work on the ADP website, and publicizing information about the ADP listserv as part of an idea exchange. Following Fred's website tour, we again heard from Dan Spoon and Carl Richardson in their capacity as members of the Film and Television ADP Task Force. They are currently working with representatives from the Regal Theater chain on a joint venture with ACB called Blind Date Night at the Movies. In either March or April of 2016, ACB would like to involve as many state affiliates as are interested in a night of blind movie going. The idea is that on an agreed-upon date, ACB members from chapters all over the country will attend an audio-described film at a Regal Cinema Theater in their community. Members of the ADP Steering Committee would like to partner with state and chapter affiliates to make this event happen. Participating chapters can work with their local press to publicize the event. If handled well, this can be an excellent public education campaign and a beginning of dialogue between blind theater patrons and movie theaters in their communities. This is an exciting mentorship opportunity for all. Stay tuned for updates. Rounding out the afternoon's discussion, Margie Donovan, who is Capital Chapter Vice President and Advocacy Chair, shared how she worked with her constituents to bring audio description to Broadway Sacramento, one of the city's performing arts venues. Her chapter used some of its fundraising proceeds from a bingo event to attend a live, audio-described production of South Pacific. Attending audio-described shows performed by Broadway Sacramento is now an ongoing activity for Capital Chapter members. Silicon Valley Chapter Vice President Susan Glass then told about how a presentation that she made on audio description to the Vista Center for the Blind in Palo Alto resulted in Vista clients collectively purchasing tickets to a number of audio-described live theater shows at Theater Works in Mountain View and Palo Alto. Clients pay for their own tickets, and the Vista Center arranges transportation for everyone to and from the theater. This fact is worth noting, since inadequate transportation is often a significant barrier encountered by blind patrons wishing to TTEND live theater performances. Prior to each show, Vista clients also meet for dinner at a local restaurant. This too is worth noting, since many of us are more likely to participate in an outing with others rather than by ourselves. Now here comes my gentle pitch to all BC readers. I'm hoping that this article has piqued your interest in working with your CCB chapter to promote audio description in your community. Here are some recommended first steps. Visit the ADP website and browse the plethora of resources there. You'll get a sound foundation about AD that will allow you to educate your local community. Join the ADP discussion listserv to stay abreast of AD issues, and chat with others who share your specific AD interests. Familiarize yourself with the ADP Task Forces, Steering Committee, Performing Arts, Film and Television, Conference Planning, Awards, and Young Describers. You can read about these task forces, their responsibilities and their members on the ADP website. Join the ADP Audio Description Mentorship Program chaired by Susan Glass. Watch for an upcoming Braille Forum or BC article that describes the mentorship program in detail. Or, contact Susan Glass at susenchglass@.net. Call your local movie theaters to learn which ones offer audio-described films. Patronize those that do, and educate those that don't about audio description. Whenever you attend a live theatrical performance or dance concert, ask whether audio description is available. Ask ahead of time if you can, for instance, when purchasing your tickets. If the theater doesn't offer AD and theater personnel don't know about it, educate them. These tips also apply if you visit an art museum, a national park, or a nature preserve with visual signage. Make attending an audio-described event one of your chapter's recreational outings, and then share your experience with the rest of us by writing about it in the BC. California Council of the Blind Officers and Board, Editor's Note, we are indebted to Bernice Kondarian who updates and corrects the list of CCB officers and board members, including the number of the term each is presently serving, the year elected to that term and the year next up for election. Terms begin on July 1st following election. The presence of an asterisk means that the individual served a partial term before the first full term. President, Jeff Tom, Sacramento, 14-16 first term, 916-995-3967C, jeff.tom@ccbnet.org. First Vice President, Eugene Lozano, Jr., Sacramento, 14-16 fourth term, eugene.lozano@ccbnet.org. Second Vice President, Judy Wilkinson, San Leandro, 15-17 first term, 510-388-5079C, judy.wilkinson@ccbnet.org. Secretary, Artis Bezin, Burbank, 15-17, first term, artis.bezin@ccbnet.org. Treasurer, Peter Pardini, Mill Valley, 14-16 third term, 415-990-9202C, peter.pardini@ccbnet.org. Immediate Past President, Donna Pomeranz, Pasadena, 14-626-844-4388H, donna.pomeranz@ccbnet.org. Board of Directors, Lena Bendy, Sacramento, 14-16 third term, 916-905-9034C, lena.bandy@ccbnet.org. Vincent Calderon, Montclair, 14-16 fourth term, 626-429-4539-C, vince.caldron@ccbnet.org. Stephen Fort, Alameda, 15-17 First Term, 510-604-5657-C, stephen.fort@ccbnet.org. Joseph Lopez, 15-17 First Term, joseph.lopez@ccbnet.org. Pamela Hill Metz, Chatsworth, 15-17 First Term, 818-882-3610-H, pamela.metz@ccbnet.org. Charles Nabarit, West Covina, 15-17 First Term, 626-338-8106-H, charles.nabarit@ccbnet.org. Paul Patch Jr., Sacramento, 14-16 First Term, 916-662-0861-C, paul.patch@ccbnet.org. Frank Weld, San Leandro, 14-16 First Term, 510-541-1442-C, frank.weld@ccbnet.org. Robert Went, Long Beach, 15-17 Fourth Term, 562-438-7100-H. Robert.went@ccbnet.org. Publications Committee. Linda Perel, Chair. San Francisco, California, 94112, 415-577-8437-C, linda.perel@ccbnet.org. Judy Wilkinson, Editor. Susan Glass, Associate Editor. Annette Carter, Mike Keithley. Roger Peterson, Bonnie Rennie, Donna Sanchez, Dr. Catherine Schmidt-Whitaker. If you or a friend would like to remember the California Council of the Blind in your will, you can do so by employing the following language. I give, devise, and bequeath unto the California Council of the Blind, a nonprofit charitable organization in California, the sum of dollar sum, or sum, to be used for its worthy purposes on behalf of blind persons. If your wishes are more complex, you may have your attorney communicate with the executive office for other suggested forms. Thank you.